On this episode of the Board Games and Beer podcast, Morgan and I are joined by Eduardo Barraff for the launch of his Kickstarter game, Liftoff. We discuss the game in length, how he thought of it, and of course, what beer goes with it. All that and much more on episode 11 of the Board Games and Beer podcast. Welcome. You're listening to the Board Games and Beer Podcast. Welcome to the Board Games and Beer Podcast. This is a special interview tonight with Eduardo Barraff, and we are going to talk to him about his game Liftoff, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. And also, hi. I got Morgan joining me, so how are both of you guys?
I'm good. I'm awake, I promise.
Yeah, and how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing well. A little tired also, but overall doing fine.
Yep, sounds like we all are, kind of. I mean, we've all had some interesting weekends, it sounds like. Anyway, once again, welcome to the show.
All right, Eduardo. First of all, I'd like to welcome you to the show myself, and I just would like you to tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, your background, and about Liftoff itself.
Sure. Well, so... my background is games. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be making video games rather than board and card games my entire career, from essentially starting a game development group in college to moving up from QA to design to production to running studios, and really have, you know, had a great time in, you know, video game development. I started really from that, branching into playing just tons of board games and card games, and, you know, I just love playing games with people of all sorts, and from that started, you know, designing card and board games, and that brought me to Liftoff.
Mm-hmm. So you, like you said, you mentioned video games, so I'm just kind of curious, what's the why kind of the shift to the board game, you know, maybe away from the video games? I mean, is it a little more of a challenge there, or is it a little more interesting, or what was the logic there?
I mean, I think it's a good question. I guess in my heart, I just love making things, and, mm-hmm. and I love games. And I think that, you know, it's a different type of experience. It's a different type of design and development. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the fortunate things I've been able to do is work with people who I've met through making video games, mm-hmm. and then actually, you know, work with them to make these card and board games. So, like, Murder mm-hmm. of Crows, Thomas Denmark was the art director at Mind Control Software when we were working together when we mm-hmm. started that. And mm-hmm. for Liftoff, I met hired Nicole Kelly at Blue Fang Games. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after we both left there, we started working on Liftoff. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a natural tendency to play games of all sorts if you're into mm-hmm. that thing, but mm-hmm. Type of thing. But it is very different. I mean, it's a different dynamic. I mean, you don't need engineers to make board games. I mean, mm-hmm, that's spectacular mm-hmm. in and of itself. No offense to engineers, of course. But it's a very different experience mm-hmm. than going through and making a console game or a mobile game or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Oh, that makes sense. I totally follow that. Well, it's basically, you know, game mechanics are somewhat similar. So, you know, games are games, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I like both. But, you know,
that's yeah, them, it's, they're all great.
Yep.
Fun entertainment.
Exactly. Eduardo, what was the inspiration behind Liftoff, and how did that come to be?
Well, so the inspiration behind Liftoff, I think at the time I was playing, you know, I mean, obviously, like, Ticket to Ride and Catan, but mm-hmm. I just started playing Forbidden Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things for me, at least, is, you know, I've played, you know, the gigantic $100 games and the World of Warcraft board game, or, you know, mm-hmm. On Haunted Hill, or, you know, any of these really deep, long, extended experiences. And, mm-hmm. you know, over time, I like more lightweight, fast, fun experiences mm-hmm. where you sort of can play it once and be competitive the first time. Like, the first time you play Ticket to Ride, or the first time you play a lot of Euro-style games that aren't like Colosseum, you know, you can sort of play it and feel like you're engaged in the experience, where mm-hmm. a game where you have to, like, learn the rules the first time and then play it again,
mm-hmm.
To me, isn't as satisfying, because I play games with lots of people. You know, there's so many games out there, you can't just play one game over and over again, or I don't like to. I like playing mm-hmm. new games.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big deal when I can play it for the first time and feel like I played it. So sort of on the back of that, I was like, well, you know, I want to make a game. I like cooperative, but I like competitive. And wouldn't it be neat if, you could sort of have something that felt like a little like Ticket to Ride and a little like Forbidden Island. I mean, those are some key games I was playing at the time, but mm-hmm. sort of lightweight experience, but also where we were working together, but then starting to work against each other. And that sort of led me to this idea of, well, you know, I don't know, maybe I was also watching Survivor at the time. I don't know. But it led me to this, you know, confluence of all this stuff. But it led me to this idea of like, you know, when on these shows, you have all these people working together to get off an island. Actually, mm-hmm. originally, it wasn't a planet. It was just like a deserted island. And it was like, everyone's on an island. And initially, they're working to get, or maybe I was watching Lost, man. I don't know. But it was like, how do you get off the island? And then at some point, you know, maybe you don't have enough fuel, or maybe you don't have enough food, or there isn't enough room on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything shifts and everything changes. And I wanted to play with that. And that's sort mm-hmm. of how I started in on it.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Yeah, it just seems to me a lot of the game design now seems to be kind of going in the direction that you just mentioned, where it was like, you know, a little quicker to play. You know, people can grasp the rules really quickly and get right in and start playing. It just seems to be a lot of the game design now is really kind of going that way, and I like that.
And I think that actually mirrors casual games and mobile games, where as the board game is, I mean, I don't know if it's a heyday or just, but board games are, you know, exploding right now, and mm-hmm. The audience is growing. And you saw mm-hmm. this in the video game industry. As the audience moves away from core, you know, 16 to 22 to 24 year old males, right? And it sort of branches out
right,
into
right, right.
families and broader audiences and a larger percentage of female gamers. And just as it grows out of that core hardcore fantasy audience, you know, you find you reach people who don't have as much time to invest. They don't, they want to play something quick and enjoy it. And I think, you know, this is now even moving into this micro game movement that's happening now, with things that people don't want to carry around a box for a board game. They want to have it in a bag in their pocket, like, and enjoy it that way. So, you know, I think that trend ties into this expanding audience mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, I think it's good too to try to get people, you know, kind of involved in it or whatever. I mean, we, you know, Morgan and I have kind of discussed about, and even in a board game group that I'm a part of, you know, trying to put a list of games together to kind of intro people kind of into the hobby.
Sure.
That doesn't really scare them away, because, I mean, what we find, we get a lot of people come to our meetup group and they'll say, well, what do you guys play, like Monopoly? I mean, I'm sure you've heard that a lot. And it's like, we kind of go, no, it's not really like that. But, you know, if they, you know, they're genuinely there and they want to learn how to play, I think the worst thing we can do is try to scare them away. So I don't know. It's something I think, you know, Morgan and I have been kind of discussing mm-hmm. about, you know, developing a list of like these, you know, not must play games, but good intro games for people that really aren't accustomed to playing these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. And again, I'm often in that situation. And, mm-hmm. and I actually find that the thing that works, which I tried to drive in, you know, develop in Liftoff, but I think happens in a lot of great games where you can also sort of connect and pull into the narrative. Mm-hmm. I think games are games that people enjoy. Like Takenoko is a little bit more complicated,
mm-hmm.
but it's so cute and engaging that mm-hmm. I find that's one that really draws people in. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think so. I think having that list and having those games on hand is great. I mean, even now, I was playing. We were at a big game event, and somebody wanted to play like Fortune and Glory, and it was, mm-hmm. you know, this gigantic box and mm-hmm. 6-player game. And you know, I mean, I'm sure it's actually a fine game with lots of sophisticated components, but in the day, in the experience, it dragged things out so much that mm-hmm. like, I know people were just like, I'm done playing board games after this game. Like, it just sort of, you know, it just sort of was like mm-hmm. the last thing mm-hmm. everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, games that invigorate and, you know, people want to play again or play something else, I think is always mm-hmm. a huge value.
Exactly.
Definitely. So you've mentioned, you know, a lot of games by name. You've mentioned Ticket to Ride, you've mentioned Forbidden Island. Are there any, like, designers specifically or games specifically that have really kind of influenced you as a gamer and you as a designer, not necessarily just specifically on Liftoff, but just as a person?
That's a really good question. Miyamoto? The thing for me, the first name in board games that I sort of really learned was Canintia, and I was just so blown away by his use of math and being able to so perfectly balance and handle all these different games. We were playing Lord of the Rings, The Confrontations. I might have gotten that wrong, but absolutely, like, I love Stratego as a kid, and that game's just better. And also Small World in the same way. It was like, oh, this is like Risk, but just better. They've just made this game much better. But no, he was the first guy. I was like, this guy, and I would be like, I'm going to play some more of this guy's games. I mean, I want to see what else he's done. And then you find out it's like, no, he's got like 100 games, and you can't do no, he's. But another person that's had a huge impact on me and my career is Susan Ross, who makes Quirkle, and in particular because I've met and know her. She has I was introduced to her by Thomas, and she has some game night in Petaluma, and you know, just having somebody who was making games and engaging it and could talk about it and answer questions, that was really it. From a just sort of, oh, you can do this. You can't make any money doing it, but you can do it. that was a really important thing. But on the game side, you know, I like to play a range of games at any given time. I can get excited. I mean, you know, for me, like, an icebreaker game was obviously Catan. But that's sort of, you know, that's a traditional one, I guess. I really like games that make me think and play in different ways. Like, I had the opportunity to play Space Cadet Dice Duel an 8-player, 4v4 sides, and it was the first time I've played it. And I guess I didn't realize there was a frantic dice category. Like, I've missed that trend. And I was just blown away. I was like, this was as if I was on the ship frantically trying to deal with a situation. Right. Like, and we had captains telling people to. I'd never really played a game that way. And so for me, and it's true in video games too, it really, that's what inspires me when I play something. I'm like, oh, this is, dude, they've just turned it over. Or when they execute it so well, where you're like, oh, like Takenoko, it's like, it's not that different, but boy, they really nailed it, that fiction, and it just feels so, you just like want to have it and play with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're talking about the dice ones. See, if I've heard some really interesting things about that too. I mean, we had a con here a couple of weeks ago, and Alan Ernstein was there, who's designed like Incan Empire and Dry Gulch Junction and a few other things. And he was ranting and raving about that dice game, about how fun it was, the Space Cadet one.
Yeah, you know, again, it's just one of those things where you're like, wow, I would totally do that again. I mean, it's intense, right? I mean, I could see lots of people who become, you know, like Hex, you're like, I know a lot of people who won't play that game. They're just like, it's like, this is too intense for me. But you know, I just found it fun and interesting. And, you know, in other games, to me, influence on Murder of Crows was, to some extent, obviously it has some Uno influence, but moreover, we were playing Guillotine, and that was the first time I'm like, oh, I think that was the first little card game where I'm like, oh, this is like, it's like a deck of cards, but they've just done something totally different with it, and they have, you know, and this is a fun little game. And so I try to draw from everything I play and try to make as much time to play as possible. Like, in the video game space, it's like I just have to download everything and check it out. So but you know, in board games, it's a little harder. You have to go buy them. They cost $40.
Or find somebody that has them and just mooch off and play them. That's just what I do.
And I also like playing games with, you know, when people love them, right? Like when somebody's like, hey, let's play this game, that usually is going to be a good experience.
Yeah, I think that's why we all do it anyway, to be honest with you, isn't it? It's just kind of that interaction. If you do get together with a group, it's amazing how some games, they're really good, but sometimes it matters the crowd that's there. You know, playing it with you, and that can kind of sometimes that's an interesting thing. You just point that out, that sometimes I don't even think about that. Sometimes I played like this game, I love it, but then I played it with this group and they just weren't as enthusiastic about it. And, you know, it's just the way it is. And then you play it with somebody else and it's like completely different experience. It's basically the same game, but it's really the people that kind of make it, isn't it?
Yeah. And some people are have more fun with take that mechanics, and some people, you know, more cooperative or competitive.
Absolutely.
And they play games differently. And as you sort of, and you know, some games are different with 2 players to 4 players, right? So I think there's a big range of experiences you can have. But I mean, I'm the kind of guy, interesting, like, you know, there's the expression, like, people like the lowest part of your life is going and getting like drunk in a bar by yourself. For me, like playing a board game by myself, or like going to a movie by myself, that's like the, like, I just can't. I feel like it's just terrible. And I know there are people out there who like that. But for me, it's like I want to go enjoy entertainment with people. I like to share it, remember it together. I'm not so much, you know, as a kid when I didn't have any friends, maybe I just spent too much time playing video games by myself in the dark. And I was like, I'm never doing this anymore. But I like games you can play and engage with others.
Right, right. So I've noticed that Liftoff has some fantastically whimsical art style, and I love the prototype that I've seen. What was your build process and the art process like for that?
That's a great question. I'll sort of answer it in two parts. For me, whenever I'm working on sort of an independent game, whether it's a video game or board game, I learned very early when I started in college that rather than sort of being the guy in charge of the game and saying, I want this art, I want it to look like this, I find if you're working with an artist, if you look at their work and you just say, wow, your work's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Can we just make this game look like this works and the style you love? Mm-hmm. They enjoy it more. They're engaged more. They work faster. So in terms of the look and feel of the game, I knew Nicole. I knew her work. I mean, if you look at her portfolio, I think it's like NicoleKelly.com. If you just look at her stuff, it's like, oh, all of her stuff is fantastic and cute and has like a nice textured, interesting feel to it. So really that just came from her being inspired in the game and then doing her own style on it. In terms of the process, I started on a single piece of paper. You know, I'm a big pencil guy. I grew up a little, I didn't quite, you know, I wasn't born in the 90s, so I still use pencils. But I, you know, I just drew it on. I thought about it, and I at the time it was still an island, and I drew the island, and I talked about the four ways to get off. You know, like a radio, a smoke signal, a boat, making a boat, and swimming, and then, you know, I started thinking about how. You know, what the mechanic would be to gathering resources and moving to the locations and the spatial things around it. So that's just sort of how I developed it. And for what it's worth, all of those things are still there. The satellite's in there. I actually left smoke signal because I thought it'd be hilarious. The boat became a rocket ship and the swimming became a jetpack. So it was a really sort of faithful transition there. And then I had that piece. And, you know, I'll take for a game like a board game, I'll take components from other games and be like, okay, well, these cards mean that. These are the, you know, I just put the pieces on the table and I mess with it. I'll usually play as quickly as possible. This is, again, this is true, you know, fail fast and quickly, iterate as fast as you can, play at every stage, right? That's true for video game development, that's true for game development from my experience. So was playing a lot on paper. And then building out the board. And then when, as I got inspired and was driven to like, okay, I'm really going to try to make a board game out of this. Then sort of separately, I was with Nicole and saying, okay, hey, how can we have fun with this? You know, if you look at my portfolio of just games I've made in general, what video game more games, I like, you know, attractive, poppy visual things. Like, I don't believe that there's art that's like kiddie art. Like I think that fun graphic, I mean, I love animated films and anime and cartoons. And, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with any of that. Right. So for me, I wanted to bring some of that life and vibrance from video games into board games. Cause I think a lot of times board games just are very illustrated fantasy, you know, and I think you can have fun and I'm not scared of something being cute. I mean, I think a lot of people see, and you know, it comes up when people talk about the game and they're like, oh, it says 8+ and it's cute. Aren't you afraid people are going to think it's a kid's game? And it's like, maybe. But like, then there are all those people who are just going to be able to smile when they pick up the little guy in their hands and take him off the planet, right? So that's sort of how I got around to it.
All right. So you mentioned earlier, and kind of just grazed by it, you currently have another game out there that can be added on to your Kickstarter called Murder of Crows. Can you tell us just a little bit about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. So Murder of Crows is a game that I co-designed with Thomas Denmark. I mean, Thomas Denmark, you know, was another guy who I met in the game industry, but he actually had made a card game called Dungeoneer, which is pretty fabulous game with, like, expansions. I mean, it's been around for a long time and has done well by Atlas. And he had been working on a game. He sort of wanted to make an Uno game, and he had this idea of, spelling the word murder and trading cards. And so, you know, he sort of invited me in to work with him. And, you know, I sort of took two approaches to it that brought it to life. So, sorry, Murder of Crows is 2 to 5 players. It's 15-minute icebreaker game. Mm-hmm. You're spelling the word murder in front of you. So mm-hmm. you have cards in your hand, and as you play them, you're sort of spelling it out. Mm-hmm. And there's a mood and a setting and you know, a victim and a, mm-hmm. a killer. And when you spell it all out, you win. And then along the bottom, it actually reads out this sort of programmatically, if you will, this generated story that's unique to the cards you played. And we're using adjectives, nouns, and verbs to actually write it, you know, read it out. And so when we were talking about it, I don't know, that was like something I always thought would be cool, if you could like make a game where you tell a story and it actually automatically works. And mm-hmm. so I sort of engaged with him on that, and then also just sort of infusing it with more of that narrative. He was sort of, and I mean, again, he's fantastic. He had started at this place where it was much more on the Uno side, where there was less narrative within the cards and sort of story, and we sort of shifted it over, in which case then he found out that he had to do all the arts for every card had unique art. He just wanted one to be an M, one to be a U. And by the time we were done, it's this beautiful game where every card is unique, you know, hand-drawn art by Thomas. And so it ended up taking us 6 years to bring to market. But because we all have day jobs, but really, it was, you know, again, I think it's dark, but in a fun, light way. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's just a great game where you can pick it up, really simple instructions. Each card does one thing. It's got a little bit of take that, and I think people enjoy it. So hopefully mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I've found out through really like engaging in crowdsourcing and Kickstarter and like really trying to like dive into like sort of board games at the grassroots level is there are tons and tons and tons of games out there mm-hmm. that no one's ever heard of or played. Like everyone has a room and you go there and you know like 5 games, and then mm-hmm. they've got 40 games that you've just been like, where did you buy these games? And they're in boxes and they're shiny and they're pretty. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. so, you know, I mean, I think it's also a nice opportunity that people who maybe have never heard of it will see it. It also helps me sort of help create some tiers so that I can actually fund Liftoff as well. But I think people enjoy it.
All right. So kind of speaking of that, you just brought it up. Other than obviously backing the game themselves, which we hope all of our listeners will take a look and consider doing, how can our listeners help you get Liftoff funded?
Well, so I mean, obviously, right, the funding, it is one. The second one, you know, is just being sort of aware of the major moments in the campaign and you know, retweeting or making a comment about it or passing it along, you know, especially somebody who's a backer, they want to see it funded. Mm-hmm. They like the idea. They want their copy. They, you know, if each person finds 10 other people and each one of them, you know, it's that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that, you know, those I think are the obvious ones. I think the ones that aren't as obvious are, you know, I've been trying to really, you know, this Kickstarter thing's new for me. The crowdsourcing thing's new for me. Mm-hmm. I've been really trying to embrace this idea of pay it forward and be helpful to anybody and everyone. And then mm-hmm. as opportunities come up, they can do the same. So what I've tried to do is be totally transparent with what I've been doing. I've been very open with passing around my preview link. And, mm-hmm. you know, I created this sort of Liftoff SWAT team of just random people I've met who seem like they're interested to know what's going on. Like I made a little calendar and I sent it to them. And so to answer that question specifically, if anyone has any ideas, like, oh, have you seen this? You know, I heard about this podcast from somebody else telling me about it, right? So mm-hmm. I think if anyone has any ideas or suggestions, recommendations, people to talk to, mm-hmm. I've found that that's amazingly, you know, like on Twitter, you're in this gigantic room with every single person mm-hmm. who, and you can just start having a conversation with any of them. So mm-hmm. somebody introduces you to somebody. It's not some email chain or some meeting. It's like, no, you just have a conversation right there. Mm-hmm. And so more than just help fund, help spread the word, it's help engage and set, you know, come up with ideas and ways to, you know, spread the word mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or not spread the word, but like new things. That's not just posting a Kickstarter link on your Twitter every 3 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Things that really create new opportunities for value.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically really talking about it, which I tend to think that's the way that kind of works anyway. So if you get some people, you know, blowing that stuff up and discussing it and stuff like that, because I know that's what happens with us, you know, and then they say something and then it goes there, but then it also goes in physical contact with people too. I mean, that's, I know I do a lot of that kind of thing. So,
awesome. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you knew this was coming. We always ask our interviewers this question. So what is the, like, perfect beer that would go with Liftoff?
That is a good question. So what is a perfect beer? It would be a light beer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, everyone has their tastes, and I think beer is such a wonderful thing that people – I grew up in a family where my father brought his beer to mm-hmm. the parties we went to. He didn't worry about what beer they had. He'd bring his Chimay nice. With him. but again, okay. something light, like a, you know, something on the order of a, like a Stella, or if you're in the mood, it's a Planet, but it was based off of an island, so maybe like Corona, but like something that's mm-hmm. an easygoing mm-hmm. opener. I think if it's heavy and, you know, this isn't a Guinness game. This isn't a game where you're right. just going to like sit and okay, it's something that you should just enjoy and have fun and engage on the narrative. So mm-hmm. those would be my two recommendations, mm-hmm. but certainly whatever anyone wants, I'm not going to stop you.
great.
All right. So one of the things we always make sure to ask, how can our listeners get a hold of you?
So I've been super engaged on Twitter. And so it's at ebarra, first initial, last name. And if you send me a message, you'll connect with me. Also, in terms of Liftoff, if you just go to facebook.com/liftoffgame, you know, like it. That's where I'm doing all my, you know, major updates and information. And also, you know, it might say Liftoff is responding. You know, it might be the little alien responding to you, but the only person who talks for the alien is me. So, like, if you make a comment and the alien responds to you, it's me.
Okay.
So those are the two best places, I think, to you know, get in touch. And if you just want to learn more about me, you can go to my personal site, which is just Barriff.com.
Barriff.com. Okay, cool. Because what we'll definitely do is we'll throw those up on our show notes so people can quick link right to that stuff and don't have to be
hungry. As soon as the Kickstarter link is official, you know, you guys will be the first to have it. And, mm-hmm. and please, you know, what's interesting, what's sort of important about Kickstarters these days is sort of having a really strong initial mm-hmm. day or first day or two to get that momentum. It sort of pushes you up into different categories of blogs and attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, getting a big swell at the start is part of being successful.
Right. So is there, Eduardo, really, got some really great things to talk about here. So is there anything else that you might want to share or?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I'm super appreciative to anyone who does, engage and back and really, I happen to, for lots of weird reasons, have lots of fantastic IP and game stuff that I'd love to bring to market. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this can, you know, start a trend and, you know,
Right.
become a game guy that you guys, you know, look to enjoy the products of.
Awesome. Awesome. Anything else you want to add to this too, Morgan? Anything else we might have missed asking?
I'm trying to think if I can remember anything, and I think I'm doing pretty good to remember my own name right now. So.
Yeah.
I think we covered quite a bit.
Yeah, we did. I don't think she's been drinking any beer, so I'm not going to attribute it to that.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It started. It exactly. would have been much more exciting conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So, Eduardo, so your game is going to be hitting the Kickstarter here, and we'd really like to remind our listeners that we want to get behind this. It looks really like an awesome game, and we'd like to do anything we can to kind of get that ball rolling so we can get this thing into our hands. And I really appreciate you taking your time out to speak with us this evening.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on the Board Games and Beer Podcast. We'll be back to the normal show segments on episode 12. Stay tuned. Until then, good night, good day, wherever you are.